We're gonna start in Job chapter 29. We left off last week in chapter 27. And although we're kind of jumping around in this study with Job, you know, we went through that first cycle of speeches, and we're kind of jumping over that second and third round because they're pretty much the arguments are pretty consistent with the Job defending the type of person that he is and that he was before all of these events took place, and those friends of his kind of attacking him with these accusations that he was not who he said he was. But there are a lot of great lessons that are within those writings, and I don't want to minimize any of those lessons by jumping over them, but from the very onset of this study, one of the things that I wanted to make sure that we were able to do during the limited time that we had in this quarter was to be able to look at Job and look at his friends and everybody and everything that was involved and be able to make an application to our lives today. Because, you know, as God says, that everything that was written before time was written for our learning. And, excuse me. And certainly Job has given us some great, great lessons in regards to how we should conduct ourselves when things don't go right all the time. He gives us some great understanding about what the wisdom of God is and what the fear of the Lord is and how to handle, peer pressure and all of these other things. There are numerous amounts of great lessons in there. But I want us now to get to that point in this story where Job is about to summarize everything that's taken place. Okay, these guys have been attacking him, and he gets to chapter 29, and he says, well, I'm just going to summarize everything that we've discussed up to this point. And I want us to look at what he begins to say in chapter 29. And before we get into it, I spent probably about 2 hours trying to summarize this, and I went through and I picked out different things that I can say and kind of summarize in about 2 or 3 minutes or 5 minutes. But I really want us to look at Job's own words and see exactly how he describes himself before all of this took place. And I'm so thankful that God, you know, allowed us to go inside of the mind of this man and see exactly what he was thinking at that very moment. So it's only, let's see, there are 25 verses, and I'm going to go through them kind of quickly, but stay with me, and we're going to stop every so often and kind of look at some of the things that he describes, and I love the way that it was done, and I'm thankful to God that he did it this way. But he starts out in chapter 29 responding to what he's already said and continuing in his thought. And he says that he further continued his discourse and said, oh, that I were as in months past, as in the days when God watched over me, when his lamp shone upon my head and when by his light I walked through darkness, just as I was in the days of my prime, when the friendly counsel of God was over my tent, when the Almighty was yet with me, when my children were around me, when my steps were bathed with cream, and the rock poured out rivers of oil for me. Now, here in the beginning, Job says that these things that have happened to me in months past, I realized that God was responsible for everything that I had. You know, he never says that, you know, I did all of this on my own. I accumulated all of these things on my own. He did not say that. He gives credit to God. Okay? And you think about the millionaires and the billionaires that we have today. How many can you honestly say that you've seen on CNN and C-SPAN and all the other, talk shows have actually said, either in those interviews or in books that they've written, that God allowed me to accumulate all of these things? Most of the time, what do you hear? Yeah, zero. Yeah, it's me. You know, I did this. You know, and you hear two things too. You know, I did it, and I did it with hard work and perseverance. You know, you don't find too many people you know, with the mindset of God, in, of course, in the world, that say that God is the one that is responsible for me accumulating all of these things. And Job just, you know, wasn't somebody that accumulated all of these things and sat on them and just and made them his own and said, you know, I'm going to live high on the hog. Job used those things in order that he might do what? How did he use them? To help others, okay? He tells us that he treated his servants very well, okay? Not only his family, but those people that worked for him, they were blessed to be able to work for a righteous man like Job. And he says that it is God that allowed me to be in the position that I was in before all of this happened. But look what he says, and it's very subtle, but as he begins to talk in verse number 7, and in those verses following, he begins to make a bit of a change. He says that, you know, I was very high and mighty, as we're going to look, not in a superiority mindset, but I was very important because God watched over me. And then we're going to look in the next chapter, and he's going to say that God, you're the one that spoiled my success. So you see, you remember that roller coaster that we were talking about, you know, in regards to the way that he was viewing, you know, everything that was going on. This is a prime example. You know, one minute he's giving credit to God, the other minute he's pointing the finger at God. Oh, yes.
And looking up at God, why? As good as I have been, as compassionate as I have been, and this is happening to me of all people, and I think he should be bewildered.
Oh, yeah. Now, and to go along with that, not to move ahead, because that's where we're going to go, but Job is going through something that many of us, you know, would have a very difficult time, if not all of us, you know. And yet, he continues to maintain his righteousness. Now, he says some things that are in error. He says some things that are wrong in regards to the type of things that God does. But for the most part, he does not depart from God. Okay? And we all make mistakes, you know, just as Job did, but God allowed Job to be able to come back, and he allows us to be able to come back. God has not changed. Now, in verse 7, he says, he begins to talk about how important he was in the eyes of the people that knew him. He says, when I went out to the gate by the city, when I took my seat in the open square, the young men saw me and hid, and the aged arose and stood. The princes refrained from talking and put their hand on their mouth. The voice of nobles was hushed, and their tongue stuck to the roof of their mouth. Remember E.F. Hutton? Remember, I don't know if, how many people remember E.F. Hutton? I'm sure most of you do. I know those of you under 25 probably do not. And I just found out I'm old. I'm getting old. You know? E.F. Hutton, for those that don't remember, it was a commercial that said when E.F. Hutton spoke, who listened? Everybody. Okay? And Job was the E.F. Hutton of his time. When Job spoke, the Bible says that everybody listened. He says that when he went out, young men, old men, princes, the voice of nobles, everybody listened to what he had to say. Okay? That says a lot about the type of person that he was and the respect that he had from those people that knew him. And then he says, when the ear heard, then it blessed me. When the eye saw, then it approved me, because I delivered the poor who cried out, the fatherless, and the one who had no helper. The blessing of a perishing man came upon me, and I caused the widow's heart to sing for joy. I put on righteousness, and it clothed me. My justice was like a robe and a turban. Job says that I not only talked the talk, I walked the walk. Okay? He wore his righteousness where everybody could see it, not only in the things that he said, but in the things that he did and in the things that he didn't do. Okay? Job realized that he was on display. Once we as Christians identify ourselves as being a part of the Lord's church, okay, I don't care where we are, people look at us a little closer than they used to, okay? People tend to look at us when we are saying to them, you know, why do you do this or why do you do that? What's usually the response? Somebody, you say to someone, well, why is it that you use that type of language? I don't know. Yeah, everybody does it, you know. And then when you begin to talk to them and say, well, you know, maybe that's, you need to look at a different way of speaking. A lot of people get offended, you know. Well, who are you to tell me how I should talk, you know? But Job said that he wore that righteousness where everybody can see. He didn't hide it. You know, it was something that he wore, and he wore it with pride, not in a haughty way, but he wore it so that when he spoke, he had credibility. Okay? And you think about that today. How many of us can go and speak to someone and invite them to services, and we come twice a month? Okay? I mean, it says a lot, and it also speaks to your credibility. You know, if you're going to be judgmental of me, you make sure that you're doing exactly what you should be doing.
People didn't have to ask him if he was a Christian. They knew it by his actions.
Great point. Great point. They didn't have to ask Job, you know, where is your allegiance? Who do you look to for guidance? Okay? They came to Job because they saw the type of person that he was. And that is our charge today. I mean, that is a big time responsibility. Absolutely. That's right. You know, it's a big responsibility. You know, it's not one that we should shy away from or be afraid of being able to stand out on your own and say, you know, well, there's certain things about my life that I'm just not going to do. It may not be popular. I may lose friends. I may have family members that are upset with me about it. But who are you going to have to stand before on Judgment Day? You know? And as he pointed out, Job stood there in the midst of all of these people. Okay? There were some wicked. There were some that were righteous. And he stood there and he says that I was there for the fatherless. I was there for those that are widows. He says I was there to the poor. He was their helper. And then he says that he was the eyes to the blind and the feet to the lame, a father to the poor, and he searched out the case that I did not know. I broke the fangs of the wicked and plucked the victim from his teeth. He was everything to everybody. He was a counselor, you know. He was... You know, judge, jury, and executioner, if I can use those terms.
He was the man.
He was the man, okay? You know, but where did he get his counsel? Did he speak on his own authority? No. No. And a part of his credibility that we were talking about comes from the fact that these people looked at him and understood exactly where his allegiance was. He believed in God. He believed that God was able to do all things. And in his teachings, Even to these three friends, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar, he continually mentions to them about the power of God, the mercy of God, the justice of God, the peace of God, the understanding of God, and the wisdom of God. He never backs away from that and says, well, you know something? You need to listen to me. Okay? He doesn't do that. Eliphaz does. Because Eliphaz says, when he first opened his mouth, you know, to Job, he says that, you know, Job, me and the other guys, we discussed this already. We figured this thing out already, and you just need to listen to us. If you want this thing to go in the right direction, don't worry about trying to figure it out. Just listen to us, okay? That know-it-all that we was talking about. Now, he also says in verse 18, then I said, I shall die in my nest and multiply my days as the sand. My root is spread out to the waters, and the dew lies all night on my branch. He says he's like a tree planted by the rivers. Okay? His roots go out. And what happens to a tree that has sufficient water and fertilizer? What happens? It grows. And as a result of that, you get fruit as a result of that. Okay? Job was doing years ago what God expects us to do today. Okay? He expects us to be able to go out, know his word, understand it, teach it to others, and as a result of the things that we do, others will be moved to understand the Bible and to make decisions about changing their course of life. Okay? That is a wonderful example of evangelism. Years ago, a few thousand years ago, in fact, verse 21, he says that men listened to me and waited and kept silence for my counsel. After my words, they did not speak again, and my speech settled on them as dew. They waited for me as for the rain, and they opened their mouth wide as for the spring rain. They couldn't wait until he spoke again. They couldn't wait to hear more about, you know, that godly sound counsel that he was offering. Isn't that amazing?
But didn't his friends know this about?
Oh, yes. They knew about, but see, they didn't understand, you know. Okay, let me put it this way. What happens, and I'm going to back up because I don't want you to think I'm getting on you. What happens when we don't understand something, for the most part? We either attack it or we do what? Ignore it. Okay? And these guys, they've sat together, they've had this meeting, and they said, this has to be the only logical explanation. You know? This just, there's no other way to explain it. You had to do something to bring this on yourself. They understood it. To the point that they understood God, but they didn't understand the way that God works. And there's a difference. You can know God, and you can misunderstand him. You know he exists, but it's a big difference between knowing the nature of God. And then he says that if I mocked at them, those that knew him, they did not believe it. In the light of my countenance, they did not cast down. I chose the way for them and sat as chief. So I dwelt as a king in the army, as one who comforts mourners. Job had just said and laid out the person that he was before this. He's recalling all of those wonderful times that he has had leading up to these events in his life. And now he's beginning to talk about, you know, he starts off, but now, in the next chapter, you know, things are a little bit different. This is who I was. This is who I am now. And look what he says. He says, but now they mock at me. Men younger than I, whose fathers I disdained to put to the dogs of the flock. And back then, during that period, and In fact, it should be this way today, but especially during that period, for a younger person to treat an older person that way was extremely disrespectful. I wish that we were able to go back to that time when that where that would be the case today. Now you have children that are able to go to court and find a judge that will divorce them from the family. Go figure. But I mean, you think about this situation and how it jumps over to us today, and you look at young people today and how they treat. Look at this situation in New York City, where this guy in his 30s attacked a 96-year-old lady and an 89-year-old lady. Brutally. You think about how children are running the homes today. How parents, you know, for the sake of keeping the child quiet, will give in to whatever they want to do. That's terrorism. Great point. She says that's because their parents have a lack of knowledge, you know. And here's Job, and this is something that he would have never fathomed. You think about it, he says, but now they mock younger men than I, they're mocking him. And a man of that reputation is in disbelief that this would go on. And then he says that indeed, verse 2, what profit is the strength of their hands to me? Their vigor has perished. They are gone from want and famine, fleeing late to the wilderness, desolate and waste, who pluck mallow by the bushes and broom tree roots for their food. They were driven out from among men. They shouted at them as a thief. They had to live in the clefts of the valleys, in caves of the earth and the rocks. Among the bushes they brayed, under the nettles they nestled. They were sons of fool, yes, sons of vile men. They were scourged from the land. And now, they mock the very man that was there during that period of time when they were doing these things, and to give them the counsel and give them the example of how to get beyond those things in their life. Now, all of a sudden, that he's not, you know, Mr. Job that wears the nice suit and drives the Rolls Royce and lives on the big house on the hill, but now he has fallen down. Now, all of a sudden, you're not so special to me anymore. Okay? That's the attitude of these people now. Jump over to today.
Tabloids. Expose.
Yeah. You know? I mean, you think about how many people, I mean, they just absolutely loved Michael Jackson. Okay? And I'm not picking on Michael Jackson. I have my own thoughts about him, and I keep them to myself. But, you know, I can remember when people in my generation, they wanted to dress like him. They wanted to dance like him. They wanted to be able to sing like him. And then when he was no longer that person that everybody thought he was, and he began to do and exhibit behavior that was crazy, yeah. You know, now look at it. Okay, maybe that was a bad example, because I still don't have anything good to say about him after all that. But
in fact, that's what Joe's saying, that the misfits, that the dregs of society, their very sons now are mocking him.
Exactly. Yep, and that's where we're going in the next few verses. Great point, Tommy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He he went down. Tommy mentioned MC Hammer, and I would imagine that that's about 10% of the people in here that know who MC Hammer was. MC Hammer was this millionaire rapper, and he was, you know, he hired a lot of people, and everybody thought he was real great. And he paid out more money than he was making, and when he fell down, nobody, all of his friends, they took off and left him. When he needed them the most, he took off and left him. Now, Job is, and I hate using this, he's no longer in the position that he was in the eyes of the people, okay? And they have decided that, well, you know something? I don't need that advice that you were giving me anymore, you know? I don't think that you're as great of a person as I thought you was before. So I'm going to mock you, you know. I understand the type of person that you was, but understand that I don't see you that way anymore, Job. Look at verse 9. He says, and now I am their taunting song. Yes, I am their byword. They abhor me. They keep far from me. They do not hesitate to spit in my face. Prior to these events, that would have never happened. You have people that looked at Job and respected him enough that they took their problems to him. They went to him for advice. And now that you don't have all of these things, not only am I not going to listen to you, I'm going to make fun of you, and then I'm going to spit in your face. Okay? Job says, because he is loosed, my bowstring and afflicted me. Who's the he?
God.
Okay? Now, Job now is taking those things that have happened and as a result of what has happened with those people. And now he's pointing the thing and he's saying that God, you have loosed my bowstring and afflicted me. They have cast off restraint before me. At my right hand, the rabble arises. A rabble was described as the lowest class of people. Okay? The lowest of the low, a writer wrote. Okay? And he says that these people have the nerve, have the audacity, the boldness to even treat me this way. Somebody said something? I didn't hear you. Oh, okay. He says, they push away my feet and they raise against me their ways of destruction. They break up my path. They promote my calamity. They have no helper. They come as broad breakers under the ruinous storm. They roll along. Terrors are turned upon me. They pursue my honor as the wind, and my prosperity has passed like a cloud. And now my soul is poured out because of my plight. The days of affliction take hold of me. My bones are pierced at night, and my gnawing pains take no rest. By great force my garment is disfigured. It binds me about as the collar of my coat. It has cast me into the mire, and I have become like dust and ashes. You think he's depressed? Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. You think he's in a lot of pain? Yes. Now, how many people think that because he's in a lot of pain and because he's depressed, that gives him the right, or maybe, let me put it this way. We can understand why he says the things that he says. How many people believe that? Okay. Now, how many people believe that that's a valid excuse? No. Okay. You say you can understand, but it's not a valid excuse. When we go through these trials in our life, as bad as they are, and as much about the situation that we don't understand, okay, it's not for us to point the finger at God and demand that God give us an answer. Okay? And Job kind of bounces back and forth with that, and he wants God, I want to know what's going on. I have been a faithful servant to you, and I expect an answer. Now, that's not the boldness that God talks about when he says, come to me in boldness. That's not the boldness that he's talking about. Job is almost to the point. I mean, he's close to that line of challenging God, you know, demanding an answer. But it's under the umbrella of depression, of pain, of confusion. But it is never right to say things against God that are in error. And it is never right to charge God with anything that goes against his nature. Job understood that, you know. I've read some commentaries about this book, and one of the commentaries said that, well, Job didn't have everything that we have now. We have the completed word, and Job didn't have that. But Job understood enough about the gravity of the situation, number one. He understood enough about the sovereignty of God that he should not have made a lot of the statements that he made, because some of the things that he says, he comes right back in the next chapter or two and refutes his own self, you know. So Job understood exactly what it, and as we get into the next chapter, he's going to show us, that he was in complete control of himself and his thoughts. Okay? Now, look at, where were we? Verse number 20. Now he's going back to God. He was talking about God early on. Then he went back to his friends. Now in verse 20, he's going back to God. He says, I cry out to you, but you do not answer me. I stand up and you regard me, but you have become cruel to me. With the strength of your hand, you oppose me. You lift me up to the wind and cause me to ride on it. You spoil my success. Wrong, Job. Job now is again pointing the finger at God. You know, remember he said in the beginning that it was God that allowed me to be able to accumulate all these things and to be able to serve as a counselor, to be able to give to the poor, to be able to be a protector to the people that were around me. It was God that brought me through the darkness. God was my light. And now he says, the same God spoiled his success. That's a man that's not thinking rational. Okay, she says that he thought that God was no longer with him. He thought God not only was with him, that God was the one responsible. And he couldn't understand why. Yes. You know? So here's Job at this point in his life, and he's been suffering for some time now. And now he has these guys, you know, Eliphaz and Bildad and Zophar, and they're jabbing at him and putting different thoughts into his mind. And he got away from what he knew. He got away from what he knew was right about God. He didn't leave God. And Satan was not successful in regards to the challenge that was made by him to God, but there was enough that got into Job that caused Job to sin against God. He did say some things that were in error, and error equals sin. Anybody disagree? Okay. Because I've read in a commentary that Job never sinned. Okay. If anybody believes that, let me know, and I'll get you a copy of that, and I guarantee you, you'll change your mind, because this particular guy said that Job never sinned, and about three pages over, he didn't call them sins, he called them inaccuracies. That's another go figure. Okay, you said, can you be honestly mistaken? All right.
I was going to say Job kind of answered that for us when he was sacrificing for the sins that his kids might have done without realizing why.
Yes. Okay.
Not that you can't repent for even what you don't, well, you can't really repent for what you don't know maybe, but you can definitely plead with God about it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when you say making an honest mistake, that's kind of broad, you know, but from a spiritual standpoint, can you say that, well, I made an honest mistake when I let certain things about God slip out of my mouth? I really didn't mean to profane his name. I just got upset and it came out. Is that an honest mistake? Am I? Oh, you.
What about Jeremiah or the weeping prophet? He accused God of a lot.
Yeah, and remember, Jeremiah also was of the mindset of Job in regards to wanting to die. Tommy? Mm-hmm. Now, when we talk about mistakes, okay, we have the Word of God, okay? And this here has been given to us, and it is the responsibility of each and every one of us to be able to take this book, understand the things that are written in it, and base our life on it. Okay? So where is there room for an honest mistake? There is no room.
When he says, and when he comes to the Lord, he says, you turn on me ruthlessly, in 21, he's misstating the very nature of God. The love, the all-loving God, he's misstating the very nature of God.
Oh, yes. Great point. Yes.
Well, touching on that, it almost seems to me like getting into this thing with Satan is really beneath that. Why did he even consider doing this?
Her question was, why did God even engage in this with Satan? Well, in the beginning of the book, you know, he calls Job his servant, and he asks Satan, you know, well, where are you going? He says, to and fro, and he says, have you considered my servant Job? I'm in chapter 1 and verse number 8. Have you considered my servant Job? And there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil. So Satan answered the Lord and said, does Job fear God for nothing? Have you not made a hedge around him, around his household, and around all that he has on every side? You have blessed the work of his hands, and his possessions have increased in the land. But now stretch out your hand and touch all that he has, and he will surely curse you to your face. And the Lord said to Satan, behold, all that he has is in your power, only do not lay a hand on this person. So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord. Exactly. Exactly. Well, I'm going to answer that with a question if you'll forgive me. Aren't you glad that God accepted the challenge? Oh, you couldn't hear me? Oh, okay, I'm sorry. She asked, why did God allow this to happen? Why did he even entertain this challenge made by Satan? And I apologize for answering a question with a question, and I asked her, aren't you glad that God decided to take on that challenge? Because you think about all the things that we're able to learn as a result of these events, okay? It teaches us about righteousness. It teaches us about, struggling. It teaches us about the power of God, the mercy of God. It teaches us about life.
Trusting God.
I mean, we can go on and on and on and on and on. But, you know, here is Job. Now, Job is in the dark, okay? And God says to Satan that I have someone that is blameless, that is upright, and up to the challenge. And it serves as an example to us that when we surround ourselves with the commandments of God and we surround ourselves with righteous and faithful living, there is nothing, absolutely nothing, that is able to happen to us on this earth that we cannot handle. Because we have the protection of God. Doesn't mean that nothing bad will ever happen in our lives, but we have an assurance from God that I will forgive you, I will be there with you, and all he asks is what? That we love him, we trust him, we obey him. You know? I mean, it sounds... You know, it sounds easy as 1, 2, 3. Faithfulness. Faithfulness, as Dan says, full of faith. You know, we've decided, as Job did. Job did the very best job that he could to be righteous in the sight of God. That was done leading up to these events. That was happening during these events. And it happened afterwards, okay? And that is you know, the responsibility that we have to live our life in such a way that we give all that we have with all of our abilities to doing what is right, to being faithful. It does not mean we're not going to make any mistakes now. It does not mean that things are not going to happen that's going to, you know, kind of throw us for a loop. But we all know the end of this story. We know what happens to Job at the end of this story. The question is, what's going to happen to us at the end of our story? Job has done his job and what he was supposed to do. You know? Now it's on us. But aren't you thankful that God gave us the beginning? He gave us the middle, and he gave us the end. Right now, many of us, you know, we've gone through the beginning of life. You know, many of us are in the middle, and some are, well, I didn't want to say that, but a little to the right of center, you know. But we only have, right now, they make small caskets, they make big caskets. But the end of the story for us has yet to be written. It's all up to us. And how much time do I have? About a minute? Okay. We're going to pick up next week in chapter 31 where Job begins to talk about his integrity. Do you remember? He's talked about those things in what he used to be and what he is now, and then he's going to talk about, the type of person that he is from the inside. Okay? Thank you for your attention.